Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Tech Magic. I am your host, Kathy Hackle. This is the podcast where we talk about gaming, innovation, spatial computing, virtual worlds, AI, anything and everything in the innovation and tech space. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Lee Keebler. Lee, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. I am doing great. Big week ahead here in the DC area. It's the White House Correspondents Dinner Weekend. It is the one weekend of the year that I always make sure I'm home because everyone comes to DC, all the Hollywood people or the media people, all the celebrities and the singers. And, you know, you can run into Kim Kardashian and Jay-Z and then, you know, you've got all the media people. So it's a really, really fun weekend in DC. I've got a couple of events I'm going to. The Female Quotient is doing an event with Punchbowl News. So I'm going to that. And then UTA, which is my talent agency, is hosting, always hosts this amazing star-studded bash, and I'm going to that. So it'll be a lot of fun. I'm excited.
That sounds like a great time. It sounds we don't have anything of that caliber happening in Portland. Not right now. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, everyone says it's like just super rainy in Portland. We finally have like the sun is out, so everyone is just like hiking and taking their like RVs out and camping, and it's like the total opposite of everything you just described.
It's gonna be glitz and glam in the DC area this weekend.
The only glam here is glamping. That's
glamping.
All. That's
there's
all.
That's glam happening. Over there will be glamping. Yes. But yeah, I mean, oh my gosh, I mean, there's gonna be so many hot topics to talk about with people. And I take the time to just like talk to all the journalists I can, try to pick, you know, see what's going on, what they're thinking about. So I'm sure we're talking AI, TikTok, like internet, like there's just so much coming at us, right?
Yeah, considering everything that's like currently transpiring, especially like the TikTok stuff, like that just surprised me.
I knew that was going to pass though. Come on. I mean, it was part of the bill, so.
Yeah. In this particular Congress, you just don't know if anything's ever going to pass. You just don't know. So it was still a coin toss in the back of my head. It's like, it could pass. Logically, it's probably going to pass. I mean, now it's almost guaranteed in the Senate, and then it'll get signed. Like, so,
Biden's going to sign it too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I will tell you what I hear from the boots on the ground here is like, obviously, TikTok's going to ramp up lobbying big time, more than they have already. They send a message to users saying that, you know, they're going to fight this. It goes against their First Amendment rights. But, you know.
Huawei said the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So
it's just sometimes you don't win those. Like, this is a really tricky situation because there's a lot of people who are already starting the, like, free speech thing and stuff like that. It's like, well, it's not about that. It's about where the data can live. Now, right now, from my understanding, the data does actually stay on private servers in Texas and like is actually supposedly monitored. Who knows? I don't know. But yeah, this has just got a lot of more global impact than anything else that's currently happening. I've not seen anything quite like this since Huawei, and that was all hardware, right? So like this is quite interesting.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see what happens. I'm sure it's going to be the talk of the town and then AI as well. And who knows what else is going to break between now and Friday. But yeah, it's a hot weekend to be in DC. Great conversations, lots of impromptu parties. There's also this very famous brunch on Saturdays hosted by a very important person here in DC. I still haven't been invited, but my hope is that maybe one of these years I get invited to it, because it's like the brunch to be at. It's where you want to go. So yeah, we'll see. So let's just get on with
crash
the
show. It. If you know
no,
where it's going to be,
crash that. Just... No, it's like the most, the hottest ticket, the hottest ticket in during the White House Correspondents' Dinner. That isn't the White House Correspondents' Dinner, because that like very few people actually get to go to that. You got to be part
of
the.
Yes, absolutely. You know,
yeah, that's like totally different ballgame. So okay, let's get started with some really interesting news. We weren't going to start with this, but it just broke a couple hours before.
Yes. Yeah.
Very interesting, huge news coming from Meta. And it was interesting. A friend of mine sent me the link on Instagram of Mark Zuckerberg making the announcement that basically, don't bet against the metaverse and don't bet against hardware. Don't bet against kind of what's coming. Don't bet against open ecosystems. He had this whole explanation targeting, you know, specifically calling out Apple. But the underlying news here is that Meta is going to be opening up their Meta Horizon OS to other headset manufacturers. So Lenovo, that's right. for example, is one of the ones that was mentioned. So this was a really interesting perspective, because he actually did talk about Apple being a closed system, how you're, you know, what you do, you have to stay within their operating system, within their hardware, how they are looking at a more open approach to opening up this OS to other hardware developers. Obviously, they're going to keep doing more hardware. He mentioned glasses, headsets, other devices. So very, very clear shots fired. Very clear message. We are the end. Like, and he even mentioned Android. So to me, it was a very clear message of the hardware wars are just getting started, right?
It's a
and
smart
this
move.
OS is critical. So what do you think?
It's a smart move. I'm not surprised at all. Some people are kind of, I've already gotten some messages on LinkedIn and people saying things like, wow, I'm really surprised that this is open source. I'm not. So for those not in the know, or if you just never bothered to peek under the hood, the Meta operating system was basically built on top of Android. And it is why it was so well tuned to mobile processing chips by Qualcomm and things like that. It's why it works so well. I mean, they really took the Android operating system and made it something special. Now, Android in and of itself is kind of its own like hodgepodgey, open sourcey type of thing that Google has leveraged, right? And you can go learn your history about the Google, Oracle, you know, fights and all of those things. Now, I will say a few things that were, I'm always looking for what's left unspoken. And there's been a lot of chatter for the last 5, maybe 6 or 7 years about Meta in-home OS. Now, to the point where they were hiring for this position. They were hiring developers and people who work in the operating system side of things to build their own operating system. That stopped somewhere around the Meta Quest Pro, and they decided they really liked what they already have been building. So I think some of that open sourceness is inherited and that they just wouldn't be able to get rid of it on its own. But, and this is the thing that really I think is surprising people. There's this surprise that, wow, they're really leaning into the openness of this. That's not actually unusual for Facebook Meta. Like that's not, they've never, nothing they've ever built has been like super secretive except for like their algorithm, right? Like for like how their social media works and things
well,
like that.
Well, some of their glasses, like some of their projects have been a little secretive.
All their projects.
View, right?
Yeah. All of their projects are secretive. Everything that they need contributors for to create content has not been. And the perfect example is React.js, which is backbone coding language of JavaScript. It's a version of JavaScript that powers most of the web. Love it or hate it, it's there. It's a big deal. That is developed and maintained by Meta and is completely open source because, and this came from when they actually transferred their own website into React to get it off of what was it? It was originally in, I'm going to get an email about this.
Oh, I don't know.
It I can't remember what code base it was. But it needed an update. So when it updated, it went to React. So React mm-hmm. became like that language. So they're really smart. They know they need content.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need content and you want people to really push the boundaries of your hardware, let them have access because it's going to sell. It'll do two things. It's going to sell more hardware and it's going to push apps through your store and people mm-hmm. are going to have more software to buy. And if you look at Apple, and we'll get to Apple in a different segment, but if you look at Apple, they're not selling hardware and that app store is still a ghost town. Mm-hmm. So
for the Vision Pro, you mean
for the Vision Pro,
for the Vision Pro specifically,
which is obviously gotten under Mark's skin. You can actually see it in the video.
You can see it. You know what really jumped at me? So one thing is obviously a lot of the AI work that they're doing is open source, right?
Yep.
Open models or those sorts of things. So it toes the line of that openness that they're going towards, kind of a new meta of sorts. What really jumped at me was when he talked about the hardware companies that they're working with. And you mentioned Lenovo, Xbox, that really jumped at me. I just thought that's brilliant. What a great.
No, hold on.
Yeah.
Let's hop. Okay. Time to hop into DeLorean.
Let's go all the way back to
2016, 2017. The original. So you had the Oculus, right? You mm-hmm. had the Oculus VR headset,
Palmer's, right? Oculus.
The first one. And then you have the developer kit two. Mm-hmm. The first one that actually was purchased by Meta and sold in store was called the CV1. Completely tethered. It didn't have any type of tracking inside out. It was kind of a mess, but it was a very comfortable headset. I wish I'd go back to that design. Anyways, I'm rambling. It shipped because they didn't have tracking controllers. It shipped with an Xbox controller. They had a partnership with Microsoft and Xbox out the gate. This is not surprising, but I think it's often overlooked. They've had a long-standing mm-hmm. relationship, and I've always thought it's not surprising that Xbox doesn't have a VR headset because I think that they're mm-hmm. still in communication. Now, that's speculative. I have nothing to base that on. But from the beginning, their first product in the store sold with an Xbox controller. Their second product in the store, the Oculus Rift, was not made by them. It was made by Lenovo. They've got mm-hmm. long-standing relationships with these companies. And I think it's all coming to a pinnacle point where it's going to be, it's going to be everyone against Apple.
Well, he was in South Korea recently, right? Having meetings with hardware companies as well.
I don't follow him like that. I don't know.
Mark was in South Korea having meetings with hardware companies, but I think it's really interesting. He also mentioned Google Play. He mentioned, he said something like if they'll have us or if they'll do it, or he used a cheeky little line or something. I need to go back and listen to it. And it was interesting. He did say, and I think it was important that he did mention, like, guys, it's not like this hardware's coming like tomorrow.
Right.
It'll come in a couple years, maybe 2025, maybe next year. You know, I think he was very clear, like, this is a big announcement, but it's going to take some time. And I think that's what you and I have been kind of sharing with a lot of people. It's like, this is just the beginning.
Well, and there's whispers of my least favorite Quest headset was the Quest Pro. I've not been kind to that headset. No one should be. But there are whispers about a Quest Pro 2. No one's seen anything. This is all internet whisper jargon, but it would not surprise me if that's coming and if they mm-hmm. haven't like learned from their mistakes, because if there's something that they do very well, it's that they learn from their mistakes and they learn quickly. I have to give credit where credit's due. They do a great job with that.
They have great teams at Reality Labs. I have to be the first one to applaud them.
They're
solid people there.
Yep.
So we'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens and kind of how it all progresses. It's interesting though to look at kind of, and I know we're going to get ahead of ourselves here. I know we're going to talk about Apple later, but it just seems like this is the perfect point.
Yeah.
For us to kind of talk about Apple as well in juxtaposition to what Meta is bringing. And by the way, I think Meta Connect this year is going to be fire. I think there's going to be so many announcements between AI and new hardware and like everything together. It's going to be, it's going to be insane. I hope we get invited. I think that would be great for us to be there. So the Vision Pro, it's interesting that you mentioned Meta Quest Pro, right? Because Apple is pitching their Apple Vision Pro to businesses. They're really focusing on enterprise. There was a whole article that they put out, and they're doing interviews around how the enterprise is using it. Big, big push there, talking about like what Lowe's has done, what SAP has done, some others, Volkswagen, Porsche, for example, and some other groups there, and like how the enterprise is starting to use Vision Pro. So there, it's smart. It's smart to go after the enterprise. That's obviously something that I was hired to kind of help with when I was at Magic Leap. And, you know, you can see that they've been fully focused on enterprise as well. So yeah, I mean, it's a big push towards enterprise. And if there's a MetaQuest Pro 2, and they continue to go back to trying to lure in more enterprise, which is something they did at the beginning at Meta, but then eventually kind of like forgot about it. And then now I think, you know, if they do bring that new product in, they're going to focus on it. They're also, you know, Meta's also focusing on education.
Yeah.
They had a big announcement on how they're going to, you know, kind of be helping with education, headsets, and all those sorts of things. So the enterprise is heating up when it comes to competition in the headset space.
It is. And I've been continually rooting for Meta to like figure this, like work through the headset stuff out. And they've gotten really close, but also like 100 yards away. Some of the stuff that they've been able to do with their Oculus Office or something like that was really clever. I'm not surprised to see Apple take this approach. I kind of feel like they have to, because it's just so stinking expensive. It's just such an expensive headset. They will have to concede certain like login requirements that currently are in place for this to take really take place. Because you just can't force.
Sharing the device is not easy.
No,
I'll tell you that. Just like you, we've given people tons of demos of headsets, of all the headsets you can imagine. So when I've been giving demos of the Apple Vision Pro, it's like you can put guest mode, but sometimes it doesn't work well. And like, you know, I have to unlock it. It's like this whole thing. It hasn't been that easy to kind of pass the headset around.
And honestly, Oculus Meta had the same problem. There was a period of time where you couldn't use a Meta headset unless you had a Facebook account. And like, that's why they could not break into the workforce, because you just can't do
Developers hated that. I remember it.
It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't particularly like it either. Mm-hmm. Like it was a login credential problem with a bunch of kind of like hodgepodge together pieces of technology that we were seeing. Apple doing it, however, it'll be interesting to see what their play is, because so far everything has just been about getting the computer screen, I guess, bigger in your space. That's not a compelling introduction to enterprise. It just isn't. This is where like Magic Leap had compelling explanations for being an enterprise. Now their enterprise was more in like architecture and design and like putting things.
It still is. I saw them and they were here for the Capitol Hill XR demo on the Hill, and I got to talking to them. I saw their, you know, a lot of folks there from Magic Leap, and we talked about like their focus, definitely AEC, you know, architecture, engineering, construction, and you know, health is also a big focus of theirs. So there's definitely staying, they're very solid in those areas, let's say, from enterprise perspective.
And I think they're going to continue to be because of what they've built. Apple's issue with breaking into this enterprise is there's just not enough compelling reason to leverage it for work that I've seen. Now, if anyone can figure out, it's going to be Lowe's. I have always been a fan of Lowe's. For those who don't know, Lowe's, yes, I am talking about the home improvement store. Lowe's has been on the forefront of this technology since like 2015. They've had a VR, AR immersive studio in-house that is heavily funded, and they build amazing stuff. So hearing that they're on that list of like companies doing this, they'll come up with something. That team is absolutely incredible. But Apple has a bigger issue. Like, they just got to get people more engaged, and you know, I'm not seeing it. They've got the best hardware on the market. They do. They've got the most kneecapped software I have ever seen. You just can't do anything with it.
Yeah. It's tough. That's why I tell everyone developing for it is not necessarily easy.
No.
And actually utilizing the full capabilities of what the device can do is not easy either.
No.
You know, I don't want to just toggle switch on something that says like port to Apple Vision Pro. I want to actually create things that are for the Vision Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just a level of there's a level of closed, Zuckerberg's right, there's a level of closedness to the operating system on that headset that makes developing for it not only just not intuitive, but even inaccessible. There are certain things that you just can't fine tune because you don't have access to it. And that's going to continue to be a problem, because when I heard it's going to ship with an M2 processor and whatever an R1 was going to be, because that was the first time any of us had heard about that. Like, this is the most powerful all-in-one VR headset on the commercial market. And it still can't do things that the $200 Quest 2 does.
Well, I'm going to call it a spatial computer. That's my prerogative. But anyway, it's a branding thing. Okay. It's a branding thing. I don't look at the Vision Pro as a VR headset, even though there is that element. I have to agree. There is some level, some truth to that. But yeah,
That's fair.
It's fair. So it's a spatial computer. Let's call it that. So, okay. I do want to talk a little bit more about Apple and some of the things. Obviously they're trying to hit the enterprise hard. I think they're having a lot of conversations. They're going to continue to push that forward because it's just a smart way forward. And we'll have to see also when it launches outside the US pretty soon, how does it get adopted by companies, you know, in other regions. So we'll have to keep an eye on that.
It's still not. It's only in the US. There's a lot of people, right, who don't even realize that it doesn't even have the ability to be mass adopted. So I'm still, it's sounding like I'm not excited about this headset. I am. I'm excited for the next one. I'm excited for whatever it is they're blocking to just get out of the way so people can develop on it as easily as they can for like making an iPhone app. It's not like that. That was my expectation, is it was going to launch with kind of the accessibility to develop like the iPhone. And it's just, it does not have that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's early. Like, I want to, you know, I'm not betting against anyone, to be honest, at this point. I think Meta wins major points this week.
They do.
You know, at least on a Monday, recording on a Monday evening.
Anything can change by Wednesday. That's true.
Anything could happen from here to Wednesday when the episode drops. I want to mention also a really interesting article that I came across on BBC Top Gear magazine from Marques Brownlee, MKBHD. Yep. Talking about how basically the question presented in the article is, will the Apple Vision Pro and cars ever mix? And I found it really interesting, especially having done a panel at DLD in Munich with the CEO of BMW Group M, BMW M, on the future of vehicles and mixed reality and spatial computing, and how every surface, including cars, becomes a spatial interface. So I really found it interesting that he went, that he wanted to explore this topic, because I think it's very, very relevant. I mean, vehicles, all the car manufacturers are thinking about what comes next. What is the experience of the passenger, the driver? But so, you know, eventually when they are fully autonomous, we're all going to be passengers. Mm-hmm. So what is the experience? So they're all looking at gaming. They're looking at new ways that we can interact with vehicles. Once we don't have that many drivers and we're more passengers and we're going into an experience every time we're going into the vehicle. I mean, we kind of already are, but it's a little bit different. But what were your thoughts on that? Like will the Apple Vision Pro mix with cars anytime soon?
I don't think it will. The reasoning is very simple, and it is, you are still looking through a pane of glass. Like, you're not looking through a pane of glass, looking through a computer, right? So you have a motion sickness issue that I just don't think the majority of people are really willing to deal with. Maybe in the next generation.
I don't think it's going to happen right now. And I do want to do, like, just because this is a podcast, we're not telling anyone to go and drive wearing the Apple Vision Pro.
God, no, please don't.
Okay, this is not what we're saying. What we're saying is, will the Apple Vision Pro in its form currently or in the future mix with cars or spatial interfaces or what have you? So I want to clarify that in case anyone's like, oh, they're telling me to go drive with a Vision Pro.
No. No. But at the same time, this is not like a new conversation. I have very vivid memories as a kid, these like big honking vans that like these family vans that had like N64, like Nintendo 64s put into them. And there was like a big CRT screen in it, and then those, you know, those CRT screens and those family vans that people used to like take all over the country with video games in it and movie systems and things like that became screens in the back of headrests. And then that became pretty normal. Like, this isn't really like, this isn't new. Like, this isn't even like, to me, it's not even a provocative thought because it's just a different way to put a screen inside of a headset. I think anytime people are bored and they have access to something that they enjoy doing, they're going to do that. Hopefully they don't do it while they're driving. We are obviously talking about autonomous vehicles here. So I don't think this is fad. I think it's future, but I think it's more of kind of like a, well, yeah, duh. Like that's just kind of, I think, what humans do. You know what I mean?
Well,
like
it's evolution, right? It's the evolution of how we engage with technology. So I'm with you.
It's more funny to me that people think that this is a novel thought. Because in my head, I'm like, I took my VR headset, not a Vision Pro, that's a spatial computing headset.
Thank you.
But I remember taking like my Oculus Go on the airplane to watch movies on an airplane, right? That was a really good headset to watch movies in if you travel a lot. And I was at that time. So yeah, of course, that was really like no big deal. Of course, we're going to do that.
I'm looking forward to when the spatial interface is in the car. Like when we get more screens that might have spatial capabilities. Like, I don't know. I'm looking forward to that. We'll see. We'll see how it all progresses. Okay. I want to move us away from hardware. Well, it's still hardware, but moving away from hardware to talk about AI and brain gadgets and kind of everything that's happening with our cognitive liberty to say something. So, I mean, I feel like our brain is our own hardware. It's like, to me, it's the most amazing supercomputer that exists in the world is our brains.
For now.
Right. But there's a lot of stuff happening. So last week, and you sent me this, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm not wrong, you're the one that pointed this out.
Yes, yeah.
The first law protecting consumers' brainwaves was signed by Colorado's governor. Yep. Major signal, major news. I don't think I haven't seen that many people talking about it, but it is about protecting our cognitive liberty and like the things that are inside our brains, how we think, the visual cortex, like all our thoughts. How are they being, you know, if someone can tap into our brains through neural interfaces, through brain computer interfaces, through, you know, all these new devices of sorts, including like our retina, how is that being protected, right? These are our biometrics at the end of the day. And I don't think anything's more private than our thoughts and kind of what is inside our brains. So this really shook me to the core. And I said, this, in my perspective, is a move in the right direction. Should it be state level? Once again, we're going to get into that conversation, state, federal, where should this be going? But what was your reaction when you first read it?
When I first saw this article, it surprised me that anyone was even paying attention who knew how to write a bill, like to get a law passed on it, because it is incredibly forward thinking. Now, with that said, it is the right time because it's not as forward thinking as everyone seems to want to believe, right? You and I have both worked with BCI computers dating back almost a decade. We've had B-Wave reading computers for ages. I remember building light shows based off of a B-Wave reader computer when I was like DJing and things like that, when I was more in like the entertainment side of things. And it's come a long way. And now that we're seeing things like Elon Musk's Neuralink, now there's a little bit of an eyebrow raise of like, oh, wait, what does this mean? Because all of a sudden you've got a dude who is doing Neuralink based hardware who happens to also own a social media company. And like, yeah, that just sounds like a recipe for a dystopian apocalyptic future, right? Like that just sounds like
we're harvesting
a setup.
Our thoughts, right?
Right. Like this just sounds like
to be
the
very
setup.
Dystopic.
So it is the right time to do it. Of course, I'm going to lean on it's the wrong place to do it, but at least someone's done it, right? Like, so at least I'm on the, it should be done at a national level. This is going to make things very difficult across the country.
Yeah.
But that's a future problem. At least it's nice that someone wrote it so it can at least be maybe adopted one day. yeah, it's what got me in the article on this bill was that their reasoning was because it's no longer confined to medical or mm-hmm. research settings. Yeah. That's one, it's telling. But two, like, that's not new. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of this stuff coming for a while. I really think that it's Neuralink that pushed this over the edge. Yeah. And someone said, yeah, I'm going to write something preemptively about this.
Because it's internal. I think once you go inside, like, people get really uncomfortable. Because, yeah. I mean, I've used the external devices. I own two of them, external yeah. brain-computer interfaces. And I personally love them, like I've mentioned to you. So I think it's once you start going inside the brain, I think that yeah. that definitely caught someone's attention in Colorado. I will say, I want to recommend for anyone out there that wants to explore a little bit more on cognitive liberty, cognitive rights, or thinking through that really in a very deep way. There is a book that really impacted me from Nita Farahani. It's called The Battle for Your Brain. An amazing read. She's a fantastic, you know, futurist author. Educator, really. I find her fascinating, and I find her work fascinating. And the fact that she actually wrote this book, you know, is a fantastic read. So I highly recommend that. And maybe we can have her on the podcast to talk deep, you know, further about this. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, it would be. It's such an interesting topic, and I think this is the year of AI for mm-hmm. sure. We're not going to shut up about AI probably for a year. Ad nauseum, and then it'll just become one of the extra pieces of technology in the news cycle. I honestly think that the following year, it will be Neuralink, it'll be BCI technology, it's going to be brain implants. We're going to see way more of this come to the front of the line mm-hmm. in the next year or two. Yeah
definitely it's, future. I agree with you. Not yeah. bad future. Like, this is not going to go away. It's only going to progress further,
and it has,
with all the developments in hardware.
So. And it has good use cases.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing, is like, this isn't like, oh, wring your hands and be scared. It is like, no, there's some really positive use cases mm-hmm. for people who have impairments. It's the data that needs to be protected.
I agree. And to talk a little bit about that, we don't need to get into it too much, but one of the articles that we came across when we were doing kind of our production meeting was an article that says the next frontier for brain implants is artificial vision.
Yeah. It's an incredible article. It really, yeah. it is quite interesting. It is basically saying that a lot of these chips, and they specifically mm-hmm. reference the Neuralink, are skipping the line from the attached retina. So if you have like a detached retina or yeah. something, like, it just completely skips that and then takes that signal and pumps it straight to the brain. And then it's not as clear of an image mm-hmm. because, I mean, it's kind of first beta, but it's incredible that it works at all, right? Yeah. So there are fantastic applications for this. Yeah. We just got to protect the people.
We got to protect the people. We got to protect their data. Like, and to that point, which, you know, and we're going to include a link to that article there, you know, in the show notes, because I think it's a really important read. One thing that really struck me, I think, with the Vision Pro, and I'm going to go back to that for a second, and I show it in most of my talks, is a video from a famous TikToker. I can't remember his name right now, but we'll include a link to the video. He is legally blind. He actually uses a cane and everything, and he went to try the Vision Pro. And the biggest takeaway, and when I show this video to people, you can hear the gasp. Is he can see. He can actually put the device on, and because it's working with his retina and everything, he can actually read. He can see. Like, that to me was one of those moments where, like, not all technology that is developed is bad. It is sometimes how we use it, or what we use it for, or who puts it on, right? So yeah, I think some of these things are extremely powerful. People are scared. I get it, but there are some really interesting applications.
Absolutely. It is the future.
Yeah.
And we should be excited for it. We just mm-hmm. have to be prepared.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So we're going to go on break. And then when we come back, we'll talk about gaming, because we always talk about gaming, at least most of the time, lots of gaming news. And then a little bit about the internet, which is something, you know, the future of the internet, which you and I have been kind of discussing a lot. And we'll also have Lily, our producer, do Dispatch from the Fringe with a really fun dispatch. We do have a guest interview this week. This week, it is actually Allison Moore, who is the CEO of Comic Relief US. You might know Comic Relief US because they do Red Nose Day. Oh, yeah. And we're going to be talking about how nonprofits like hers are using technology and actually going into gaming spaces like Roblox. So let's go on break and we'll come right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
All right, everyone. I am thrilled. This is a treat. We have Allison Moore, the CEO of Comic Relief US, joining us. Welcome to the pod.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited. We got connected by a mutual friend, Jeff Barrett, who we both think is a fantastic human being.
Part of the fan club, yes.
Part of the fan club, so thank you, Jeff. So I wanted to start by asking you a little bit, you know, for maybe the uninitiated out there. Many people have heard of Comic Relief, but those that haven't, can you tell folks a little bit about who you are and what Comic Relief US does?
Yeah. So many people might be familiar with Comic Relief if you're American. In the 80s, as a show on HBO with Whoopi Goldberg, Robin Williams, and Billy Crystal, and doing, you know, comedy set acts and a big sort of like moment of using, frankly, comedy to drive awareness to things happening in the world. And at that moment, it was all in support of homelessness and or alleviating homelessness. Simultaneously across the pond, a young man at that time, Richard Curtis, actually launched when he was a writer director. He's Love Actually, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Bridget Jones' Diary, Mr. Bean. He's created. He is just, you know, a creator and a maker of so many different and a writer and just a hugely sensitive, intuitive individual. Went and had this life changing trip to Africa, came back, and you know, in the kind of crisis of what can I do to help the world, came up with Red Nose Day and formed an organization called Comic Relief in the UK. That happened in the late 80s in the UK. What we just talked about, it happened in the US in the late 80s, but because there were not the internets at the time, nobody sued anybody for topical infringement. So it's kind of funny because it's like, really? They weren't? No.
Kind of
so
comical, yeah.
I know, it's kind of funny. So Richard went on to kind of set and really formalize a, you know, what is the English equivalent of a 501c3, like and a nonprofit. And utilizing Red Nose Day, Comic Relief raised almost $1.5 billion, a little over $1.5 billion in fundraising in the UK, and then granting out across the world, largely in Africa, a lot of activity there. He came to the US in 2015 and launched Red Nose Day, and then scooped up the name of Comic Relief. And so we have become Comic Relief and Red Nose Day in the US since 2015. So look, and we have raised almost $436 million in the US since 2015. And I'll tell you a little bit about what we do and what we're raising for. The first and foremost is the commonality between US and UK is that it's really a platform for inspiring everyday acts of social change. Mm-hmm. You know, our North Star is a just world free from poverty, where we seek to make sure that everybody can actually thrive. And when we think about everyone, we think about generationally communities that have been locked in poverty for time after time again, the children, the families, the, you know, concentric circles of people in those communities. And our role is being able to figure out ways that we can leverage what is the power of levity and entertainment and engagement to sort of drive awareness to the fact that poverty is still one of the largest issues that we as humanity still face. And how do we do that to raise funds and then grant out to organizations that are doing the work on the ground? And I think, you know, we do that through multiple different campaigns. Red Nose Day campaign is one of them. We launched a kids relief campaign last year on Roblox, which we can talk about. And then we do a lot of, we have launched other comic relief events, and it's all about leveraging platforms and marketing and technology and engagement, to sort of raise that awareness. And, by that, we've been able to make material inroads and impact into, supporting families in their lives.
And I love that. I love that it's, you're using comedy to help communities, and technology is a part of this. So part of the work that you're doing is finding solutions that generate equality and uplift communities, like you mentioned. Yeah. And obviously that's a tall order, especially as community needs are constantly evolving, as we know.
Yeah.
How big of a role does like innovation play in keeping up with these cultural and societal changes when things are moving so fast?
I think, you know, part of my background, I came from 20 some odd years in the media business before I came to this role in this organization. And part of the reason I felt like I could bring something to this organization to help was that nonprofits, just like, you know, for-profit sector organizations, still have to break through the clutter to gather a moment where you can actually make a connection with somebody. And, you know, in the for-profit environment, you're doing that for a subscription or e-commerce or Read My Ad or some kind of like activity that is usually transactionally oriented in some way. And so you're leveraging multiple different platforms for that reach and, you know, meeting them where they are. That's always the quintessential statement, right? But so too happens in nonprofit. You know, and I think with the downward pressure on individual giving now, with people's, you know, wallets feeling much more kind of like pressured, the role for us, and particularly because we lean into entertainment and engagement and lightness and levity and laughter, like how do we build that expression in a space that we can reach the most amount of people at scale? And you have to leverage technology and innovation as a way to do that. It's funny, I've had multiple different, you know, career moments, I guess, in my background. And sometimes it's, you know, innovation comes in the form of like dusting off something that was that was deemed no longer innovative, right? So when I ran Daily Candy, we had an entire business based on newsletters. And at the time, so I was there in 2012 to 2014, you know, it was huge things like newsletters are dead, no one wants a newsletter, email's dead, whatever. That has totally come full circle. And the idea of having a one-to-one connection in someone's email inbox, if you can build a value proposition through that, now that's called innovative.
Yeah.
You know,
everything's a remix sometimes.
Everything is, you know, but part of that is because technology has become smarter, you know, understanding open click through and conversion rates off of that, or utilizing AI, right? For smart synthesis and understanding your user base in a different way, all those different things. So innovation, you know, to your point, I think it's innovation in content expression, it's innovation in distribution and engagement forms. You know, when you build something on Roblox, that has to feel sort of organic to Roblox. It certainly shouldn't feel like something that's sitting on Instagram, you know, or on Hulu. So all of that requires some level of innovation for sure.
And I love you. I love that you mentioned Roblox. So at Tech Magic, we talk a lot about gaming. It's one of the central topics that we address. So I love that you guys are in Roblox. You're one of the first nonprofits. Actually, I think one of the first nonprofits to create a virtual world there. So tell us a little bit more about that initiative and how that kind of has worked out and kind of give folks a little bit of more of a view into that.
Yeah. So one of the things that we really have been consumed with for a while is just the idea that how do you reach in an organic way, a younger audience that knows so deeply that doing good and giving back is just part of being a human being, I think. I think young people come to that understanding organically. And one of the things that we were thinking about is how do you do that in the game space? And how do you do that in the game space that feels tonally connected to what we are and what we do every day? And the thing about the Roblox platform is that it's a builder platform, a builder mindset. And the builder mindset of community is so palpable and strong. And frankly, we love that idea of kids helping kids through gameplay. And so the insight to go to Roblox was very easy in the sense that, you know, that felt just natural and organic. We had an amazing developer, Wonderworks, who really understood what we were looking for in terms of that experience. And what we built a game experience that invited all the participants to come in. And of course, you're just going and going through and getting merch and up, you know, and creating all that kind of the game mechanics that go along with that. But to build a spaceship and co-build a spaceship together, that spaceship took you to a communal experience. It was a concert. And that concert was there to be, and we had an amazing, amazing performer, Boy with Uke, who was just incredibly gracious with his time, his energy, and his understanding, and had three or four different sets that we had in the game experience on his music. And I, when I tell you, it was just, it blew through every expectation that we had. The number of people that came to engage in the concert, that engaged in the game, I just felt like it was one really indicative of the fact that when you build something and you build something that that feels again organic to the platform, it pays off. We had almost 6 million gameplays. We were the number 18 most viewed concert. We beat out the Chainsmokers and Elton John, which, no offense, but I kind of got a little bit of happy moment out of that. I know. I sort of take a really big pleasure out of that.
Yeah. Pat yourself on the back for that.
I know, right? I was just, I no shade to them. 75 million impressions, 32 billion minutes played. I mean, this was a game that was highly engaged and delightful on the part of young people. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking to take that to the next level this year. So this happened last year in 2023. We've got Wonderworks and some other partners to be announced later. We'll have to call you at a later time for that. Yeah. But I'm really excited to building on that. And now this year, you know, to your point about innovation, thinking about how we can, how can we up the ante on the experience, but then also think about how we bring offline moments to it as well. Because if the theme is kids doing good for other kids, I think there's a lot we can do offline and drive that offline online experience together and all in service of doing good. And frankly, getting the parents involved, you know?
Yeah. I love that.
Cause I think, we know who's paying for the Robux.
I feel like we all work for Roblox or for Fortnite Epic Games.
I know.
as a parent of Roblox players. I feel like all our money goes there.
I get it.
A lot of the parents I talk to always tell them, play with your kids, game with them, understand their world.
Yes.
Go into Roblox. It changes, you know, it changes kind of their appreciation of what this, you know, ecosystem is.
So, well, it's funny. I had so many parents. My daughter's 18, so she's, although
she's aged Roblox, out a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, right? But it was funny. I had a few parents and friends of mine who have younger children who said to me, I love the fact that there's a place for my kid to be spending Robux on merch in a game that does good and has messaging about doing good all the way through. I took, and you know, because some people had said to me, well, what do you think about them spending their own Robux on merch there? I'm like, they're going to be sending Robux on merch everywhere. It might as well be in a place that those dollars go to kind of impact programs, you know? And I think parents really got that in a different way. So we're hoping to build on that more this year.
I love that. Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit more about Red Nose Day, right?
Yeah.
That's obviously something you guys are really well known for. I've done it. I don't do it every year, but I've done it most years, and especially with my kids. I get my kids involved. We kind of do the thing. It's like your signature campaign. You're entering your 10th year this year.
Yes.
What can you share that might be new? Mm. You know, how are you digitizing the campaign? I'm curious. Yep.
Yeah. So Red Nose Day is our big annual fundraiser. You can donate to Red Nose Day any day, like January 1st, December 31st. But the campaign really takes a groundswell in 2 points, April, May, which we're in now, and then a holiday as well. And it's really like the goal of Red Nose Day is to raise funds for children and families experiencing poverty. And so a lot of this is around supporting safety, health, education, empowerment, all these areas. These are the programs that we support through the 50 grantees that we support along those lines. And so the key thing with Red Nose Day, I think it's almost like the most emblematic of our thesis, which is that everyone's got a role to play. You know, how do we utilize laughter and levity to make really hard things kind of accessible? And, you know, it's a red nose. I mean, it's this kind of absurd red nose that people put on their face, and people they're immediately compelled to understanding that there's some good we can do in the world together. There's something about that silliness that just breaks down barriers. And so this year, I think for us, the challenge is how do we just drive more scale? How do we drive more awareness? Mm-hmm. How do we bring more people into the tent So it's not just we don't have a physical nose this year. That's the first time we haven't had a physical nose in a long time. And then in some regard, I think I'm excited about that because coming from a digital background myself, yeah. I've always wanted to make the nose more ubiquitous, more accessible, and more frankly relatable even into the family dynamic. I mean, Red Nose Day raises funds for children and their families. Let's have children and their families mm-hmm. participate. So what we've launched this year is a bit of a new frame, kind of tapping into that and connecting with people on an emotional level around childhood. I think the one common thing that we can all agree upon right now, I mean, there's multiple things to disagree upon, but the one thing we can agree is protection and the sacredness of childhood.
Yeah.
And I don't care where you sit, whether it's in the US or other places, I don't care where you are in the age spectrum. I don't care where you are in the economic spectrum. Everyone to a person understands how we as a community, as a society, need to protect childhood and that it's worth protecting. And I think, you know, it's part of our memories of the past. It's part of the hopes of our future. Mm-hmm. So our inspiration for this year's campaign with the idea of like, how do we reach as many people and like open up minds as many as possible is less childhood poverty, more childhood.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We did too. And so if you think about that, I have to tell you, when we came to that, and we're working with an incredible group called Gus, who has been an incredible partner with us in this and thinking through this. When we come to that phrase, it's like, okay, well, how do we build more things that kind of remind us of childhood, remind us that idea that it's so important to protect in digital? So we've got two prongs. I can talk about one. The other one will be launching sometime soon, so I can be more abstract. Yeah. But the two prongs of that are really two ways to articulate that kind of idea. And the first thing is bringing the digital red nose back. So now, and bringing it back into life. So now across all social platforms, so Instagram, Snap, TikTok. Listen to me, I sound like I'm 80 years old. TikTok, sorry.
Facebook,
the tiki talkie, all the kids are on it. But taking that digital nose, and now you'll be able to grab that filter, put it into your own images, yeah. press that out, and then it becomes this viral moment for us mm-hmm. that just it. We need tons of Red Nose Day ambassadors out there. And being able to encourage. And by the way, when you come to get your filter, you should be donating. And any kind of donation, you know, we have, it's a digital platform, $1, $5, $10. Mm-hmm. If you want to give $1,000 on it, it can handle it too. 100, whatever it is, we can take it all. But it doesn't have to be a big donation. It just needs to be a moment where I took the nose, I've donated, and now I'm going to influence somebody else to do that. And the second piece is really, a digital expression that taps into the whimsy and ideas of childhood. And I'm excited. I wish I could talk about it yet.
No, we're going to be launching it soon.
But it is a way to engage and sort of like tap in the memories of people and that sort of blissfulness of childhood. And I think it's rooted in the idea that everybody who donates, everybody who gives, everyone who thinks for a moment outside of their own space, where's our common space? And that childhood experience is a common space. And when you tap memories of your own childhood, you think about children who are just facing much more uphill battles of experience, having that same sanctity of experiencing childhood. So it's a connection point, you know. And so we hope to have a little fun, a little levity, some things that partners can wrap their head around and sort of help us spread the word.
Well, I think we're all very excited and can't wait to, you know, can't wait to experience it. I mean, on the digital side and then everything else that you're doing. I think it's really relevant that we're having this conversation because at South by Southwest, you had Esther Perel talking to Trevor Noah, and they talked about how comedy doesn't come from here. Comedy comes from the heart.
Yes.
Right? And,
yes.
And that's very much aligned to the work that you guys are doing to preserve childhood and something that I think we all feel here, right? We're all yes. children, whether a good or bad yep. experience, I think we all feel it here. So I applaud you guys for what you're doing. Where can people go to learn more about Red Nose Day, Comic Relief US, what you guys are doing?
Yes.
How can they connect with you?
Yes, yes. Well, I'm on LinkedIn personally mm-hmm. and find me, and I'm on most of the socials as well. The organization is rednoseday.org, comicrelief.org. that's the big difference. Come find us. You know, you can hear all about our mission and talk about some of the things we've been doing, whether it's Red Nose Day, whether it's Comic Relief, whether it's Kids Relief as well. We would love we would love to connect with anybody that wants to be part of our community and to push our mission forward. You know, one of the things that makes us so unique is that we do rely on the kind of scale of partners to bring that to life. And I've been lucky enough to not only come from the background that I come from, I have so many friends who are, you know, chief marketing officers right now at company X, Y, and Z, and they sit around, they get to a certain age. Who knows, maybe they're around this age. We won't talk age. That's a different podcast. And they say, like, what can I do from my perch to give back to the world? Well, I'll tell you what you can do. You are running a platform that has connection to hundreds of millions of people in the audiences. And that's what something like Red Nose Day needs to just fuel fire. And that's what Richard Curtis figured out when he came back and started Red Nose Day. Like, what can I do? I think we all sit in our seats, and I think particularly marketers and technology people and people that run platforms, they have a unique power that they can bring to the world just by opening doors.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Kathy. It's really great to talk to you.
All right. So that was an interview with Allison Moore from Comic Relief US. Lee, have you ever done the Red Nose Day where you put the little nose on?
I haven't, and maybe it was just because of the last couple of years, but it's not a campaign that I'd seen like in the forefront. Maybe this is a really good sign that it's coming back to that forefront. I do remember it, but it was like years ago. You know what I mean?
Well, this is their 10th anniversary, so it's been around for a while. This year, they don't have a physical nose, like she mentioned in the interview. It's all virtual. And obviously, I think them going into Roblox, they're one of the first nonprofits to go into Roblox and the results they've seen. Just very inspiring on how a nonprofit is, you know, embracing technology and innovation and creativity in new ways to really, you know, really support a really important cause. So great interview. I was happy we were able to talk to Allison. All right, so gaming. Now that from Roblox to gaming again, want to talk a little bit about some of the things that are coming out. There was a small study, it wasn't massive, done that showed that longer gaming sessions are associated with improved cognitive function and motor control. That to me was really interesting to read. There was a very small cohort of people that were in this focus group, so it was not a massive group. But really interesting, especially for teenagers. Like, I'm looking at my kids, like, they love to game. We all game with them. They game with their dad quite a bit. You know, is this even a good thing or a bad thing? For me, I usually try to split their time between gaming and building and developing and those sorts of things. But it was interesting to read this because there's also been studies done about how surgeons that are actually gamers actually tend to have more precision and better motor skills at times than other people that are not gamers. There's even like studies done about recall and all those sorts of things. So, you know, as a gamer yourself, what are your thoughts?
I think it depends on the game at the end of the day.
Well, good point. Yeah.
You know, I think that there's a lot of just like dumb, mindless games that probably would not adhere to these type of results. However, I do think if you can have the concentration to do a thing repetitively to the point where you're mastering it, no matter what that is, that does something to the brain that makes it stronger, right? Whether that is a video game or playing a musical instrument or, you know, writing, whatever it is that you do as a hobby, paint, you're doing a repetitive action to the point where it becomes second nature, and that unlocks like some type of like cognitive power behind it. Now, for me, I grew up in the early like Nintendo generation, and I loved Tetris. Like, I was just a huge Tetris fan, and I still am. And that's the type of game that I think undoubtedly would have a positive influence on like my cognitive reasoning and pattern recognition and motor control skills and all of these things because of how it is built. And I think that there's plenty of games out there that are like that. You know, and then I've gone and I've played some games. Like, if you go and look at like Rocket League was really big a couple of years ago. Man, I tried to play that. I couldn't do it. I didn't have the ability to get that type of muscle control and focus because there's so much going on. The people who play that game and like have it figured out. Oh my gosh. Your brain goes to a different level, right? Quite literally, you level up. And I think that you have a reactionary and cognitive understanding that goes up in that moment. And it's probably a good form of training.
Yeah, and there's definitely dexterity, right, that comes with some of these things, as well as strategy, thinking ahead, two steps or three steps ahead of what you're doing. So I think it's really interesting to mention that.
And games are simulations, right? Yeah, so like I mean, if it didn't, the military wouldn't have like video game practices. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know someone, I'm not going to necessarily mention their name because we don't have their approval, but someone that is leaving a big corporate job in gaming that both of us have worked with to actually work on some games for the DoD.
Yeah.
That was really interesting.
Yeah, it'll be, and that's not at all, I mean, I don't want to say it's not all surprising. This person's great. I'm surprised. I'm like, it's great for, it's probably surprising to them. They're probably super excited and elated. I'm just saying the actual idea that the DoD or anyone in the military is like doing these type of like game developments should not surprise anybody. No. Right. This is a long time standing thing.
Yeah. And they're going, I mean, the gaming's always been a big part, right, of thinking strategically on how to play war out, right?
War games?
Games, yeah. But gaming, the idea and the concept. But for example, if you look at like who's hiring, obviously I live in DC. Once again, I'm going to go back to it. The CIA is looking for a extended reality specialist. Like, these are real things. Like, it is truly happening. I feel like.
Well, what was that movie? The Last Starfighter? Do you remember that in like the 80s? It's about like.
Oh my gosh. Like, I don't even. Like, I know the title. I don't even know what.
This kid plays this arcade game in his trailer park and is really good at it. And it happens to be an arcade game that was placed there from the Galactic League in outer space. And he's so good at it, then he gets beamed up and has to actually go fight.
Oh my gosh.
Ernest Cline's Armada. That's a novel that he wrote. Is entirely based on this premise.
I mean, it's interesting to talk gaming in the DC area. Not a lot of people are knowledgeable, but still, there's some people out there. I do want to talk about Fallout. How did talk about Fallout last week? I don't know.
There was so much going on, but yeah, Fallout, like, oh my word.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you. That's the best way to say it. For folks that don't know, so Amazon Prime has a new series out called Fallout, which is based on the video game series.
Yeah.
And
Bethesda's
it looks
video game,
amazing. It is amazing. And The Guardian had a really interesting review. Said that great game adaptations are increasingly high budget fan fiction, thanks to a generation of writers who actually understand games.
Yes.
So the curse has been broken. You know.
I wouldn't go that far. I would not go that far.
Well, I don't know. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful of whatever. You know, for me, it was like The Last of Us. Five Nights at Freddy's, now Fallout. I'm like, oh my god!
Yeah, but we also had Halo, and Halo wasn't anywhere close to the game.
But
so
season two of Halo, I mean, they had a big thing going on at South by promoting it.
That just means they had money. That's all that means. It does not mean anything. It means they had cash, right? Fallout should be like the pinnacle point right now of if you're going to do a video game based show, this is how you do it. This was more, this is not hyperbole. This is more accurate to the video game as a show than the Mario Brothers movie was.
Yeah.
And I liked the Mario Brothers movie. I thought they did a good job with that. I'm talking about the recent one, not the 1993
one.
we're going to pretend like that one didn't happen.
Yeah.
As someone who played all of the Fallout series and is a big fan of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I remember playing the game, and we're talking like, these are like 100-hour campaigns. Like these are long games. You lose so much time in these games. And so many times it's like, oh, it's like you're playing a movie, but it'd be cool if this was actually like a movie. And then this comes out and my hopes are so low. Like they're in the vault. Like they're so underground. And then this thing comes out and I kick it on and the music kicks on and it is the games. They were so true to it. It is the number one soundtrack I'm looking forward to this year.
Oh, that's so exciting. Like, I was watching a movie with my son and we saw it and he said, Mom, I want to watch it. I said, honey, it's rated R. So I let him watch the trailer, but there were like a couple of scenes and he was like, yeah, I understand why you're not letting me watch this, Mom. So I was like, yeah,
the
no.
game. I mean, the game's rated M for mature too.
Yes. It's, he doesn't play it. Let me qualify that. But obviously he hears things. It's cool. Yeah. And like all the kids are talking about Fallout. Some kids actually got to see it. It's crazy. He's in middle school. So
it is violent. Let me be very clear. There are moments, it toes a line between adorable and horrific like I've never seen before. There are aspects of this thing that are just so cute.
Yeah.
And
well, it's a post-apocalyptic world. Like, what are we expecting, right?
It's a post-apocalyptic world that ended somewhere in like a fake futuristic 1940s, 1950s. You know,
when
you saw those old cartoons of like, in the future, we're going to have flying cars like that. It's that as if everything went to crap, right? Like that's but it's so cute and so horrific. And it's
at the same time,
it's very special. Amazon, kudos to you. I am certain Netflix is eating their hat right now and wishing they had had that. And honestly, congratulations. I was thinking this was watching the last episode. Congratulations to the team at Bethesda. I cannot imagine working and being so passionate on a game like that they've put out for a show to actually live up to the expectation. Yeah. There's got to be a level of honor there that I don't even understand. Like that would just be such a meaningful, I think, thing to that team.
All right. Well, I think we're going to continue to see a lot of adaptations. Hopefully the curse has been broken. That's my hope, Lee. I'm being hopeful about this. So we'll have to
I don't
see.
Trust Hollywood. They're going to, they'll take something else I love.
Although
the
gamers
like,
are coming in. The people where the writers are.
I agree.
And the people, the executives that are starting to do some of this are gamers. And
we've seen more video game movies done right than done wrong in the last 5 years. When you look at Sonic, Mario Brothers, Fallout Now, Last of Us, Five Nights at Freddy's, Tetris, which was technically like Tetris a throwback, but like that was such a good movie. When they said they were doing a Tetris movie, I was like, I'm out. This is it was my favorite game as a kid. There's no way. Loved it. We've had more good than bad.
Mm-hmm. All right. So now moving on to the last news in gaming we're going to talk about. And there's always tons of stuff happening in gaming, but these are just three of the ones that we found really interesting. Transformers 1, the movie, has launched its trailer in space. It's a first for a movie studio, and the movie's coming in September, and they launched their trailer in space. I knew this was coming because I've had tons of conversations with space commerce people, and you know, this was obviously something that was going to happen. I mean, Coldplay had already done like their first song from space, so this was only a matter of time. It's interesting that it was Transformers.
It was Will.i.am when I was working with him. He did the song from Mars with NASA.
Oh,
that was a whole event. Like the music was actually put on like the rover they shot to something. I don't know how they did it. But they beamed it there and then they beamed it back and it actually played on Mars through the rover or something like that.
Like a digital payload. Then they sent it as a digital payload.
But it actually I'd have to go back and look. It's been a decade. I don't remember. I was there and I don't remember.
Oh, how funny.
But, you know, there was one time where they wanted him to perform. I honestly remember getting this phone call because I worked in his studio when the phone came, and I don't remember who it was. Somehow it came up like, oh, we want to perform from the edge of space, and they wanted to do like, I don't know if you remember those like tether elevator things that they were playing with in like 2015 era.
Oh, space elevators. Okay.
And we both looked at each other and he's like, would you do this? I'm like, no.
Not in the current state 10 years ago. Nowadays, I mean, Tom Cruise is going to film up there. Like, so much is going to happen. I mean,
But this type of thing, I don't know.
It's marketing.
It's
what I call space marketing, which I think I've written the most articles on space marketing that are available on the internet, to be honest, because I am so like into this. And I'm like, I work on little side projects related to space commerce. I'm not known for it. This is not my day-to-day job.
But space
is kind of something I'm on the sidelines of in some ways.
They basically attached a TV, they put it on a weather balloon, they shot it up to space, and they hit play, and it had a camera on it. Like, that was it. But you know what?
It worked.
It made me watch this trailer, and I wasn't going to... I had no interest in watching the trailer. I just didn't. Because there's, like... the Transformers movies are kind of falling into the Fast and the Furious like levels of like how many there are. I cannot keep track of all of the same movies that just keep coming out.
I'm a Fast and the Furious fan, so yeah.
Okay. I know. Why does that not surprise me?
Why does that not surprise you? Yeah. That shouldn't surprise anyone if they know me.
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. And I cannot put my finger on why, but it doesn't surprise me. And I feel
I'm edgy.
Like,
I have an edge to me that people don't know.
I feel like you don't know me well. So tell me if this is true. I feel like you got into Fast and the Furious when Ludacris showed up.
Oh, I love Luda. Yeah.
Yes. I see Luda. That's that Atlanta. That was yeah. my theory.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got into it at the beginning, but I think once Luda came, I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the Atlanta vibe, the Atlanta connection. I'm good. But yeah, how funny. All right, moving on to our last segment before Dispatch from the Fringe with Lily. Let's talk about the internet. A few articles that we kind of looked at when we were preparing for the show was an article, a really interesting one in Wired, talking about, is it time to retire the term user? I'm a big fan of, I don't like the term user or consumer. They make me uncomfortable, especially user. But it's such a used term across technology in Silicon Valley. And, you know, consumer is a hard one to get rid of, I think. But user, like at the end of the day, are people, right?
People
are using these, but now bots are users too. So what do you think?
I think consumer is easier to get rid of than user.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can get rid of consumer because it's not attached to anything but a vernacular, right? Like it's just a word that we use. User is incredibly more complicated because everyone is familiar with the term user ID, username. You know, so there, I don't see us backing away from the term user because it's,
yeah, daily active users.
Yeah, it's consumer. Yeah, okay. Even customer can there's no customer name, right? But like user, like people ask, hey, what's your username on WhatsApp? Mm-hmm. It's just too much in the brain space of how we use technology. Now, an entire generation can make a decision and say, we don't want to use this word anymore. And that's how language changes. We do it all the time. This may be the moment where we get our first, like, gosh, this is not the right word for it, but like technological slur where they're just like, we don't want to use that word anymore. We don't use the word user. That would not surprise me. It can happen. Maybe it should.
Gen Alpha should. Gen Alpha.
But it'll be a generation to make that decision, right? Like it's not going to be something that an article, you know, by itself can do. It's something where people would have to say, I don't want to use this anymore. And then
it was
a
good thought piece though.
Yeah, it is. It's very well written. It is incredibly insightful and it brings up a lot of points that I think are fair. But it's not going to be millennials who get rid of it. We're just, we got too many problems.
We're users. Generation Alpha wants to be called a user. You know, so yeah, let's leave it up to Gen Alpha and then Gen Beta, who starts being born next year.
Lord, are we already?
No, we're already going to go into Gen Beta. No one can write anything about Gen Beta quite yet because they haven't been born. We don't know anything about them. So yeah, anyway,
poor Gen Z's getting forgotten in the background.
Gen Z's the TikTok generation. For me, they're like the YouTubers. Like, I don't know, like for me, this is really interesting. Okay. And I'm going to make a side note here. And then we always go on, you know, on all these side conversations, but it's interesting to me that like a Gen Z, like you ask them, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And many of them would say like, I want to be an influencer. I want to be a YouTuber. Right. To me, it's interesting that Generation Alpha, at least the kids that I'm around and I'm talking to and that I'm seeing, like have a totally different perspective in the sense that they're like, whether it is in the virtual realm or whether it is off planet, and stay with me for a second, their idea of work and future jobs is really, really broad. Because, you know, you ask, for example, one of my kids and they're like, you know, I want to be a game developer or I want to develop games or I want to write music for games or... Like they're thinking on the virtual side, right? Or some of them are already doing things like that. But then one of my daughters actually told me once that she wanted to be a lunar food scientist. Okay. Sure. Lunar food scientist. I was like, is that okay? I guess that could be a job. Amy Webb, for example, at South by Southwest, she mentioned her daughter wants to be a lunar architect. So Gen Alpha is not limiting themselves to the current physical world. They're going into virtual world. They're thinking about physical world, but also off planet. So I think that's a really interesting sea change in how we view work.
No, it is. And I think that it's interesting because a lot of what you just said are still vocational, mm-hmm. right? Which is really nice that there's been a turn back towards the vocation side of like, what do you want to go do? Because the world and maybe beyond do need people who do this type of vocational work. So whether they make it off planet or not, those jobs will exist for them here, right? Yeah. And they are by and large jobs that cannot immediately be replaced with AI. You know, so like there are still quite a few opportunities. So yeah, it's interesting. It's just wild that it's off planet that you
can't. It's off planet. I love that. Like, I'm like, there is no limit to them. They virtual world, physical world, off planet. I love that about Gen Alpha. All right. So, two more stories that we want to hit on before we go to Lily is one of them. I don't know if you knew this. You might know this because you've talked to me, but 70% of the world's internet traffic is estimated to go through Northern Virginia. So the internet does not live in Silicon Valley, to be honest. No. The internet lives in Northern Virginia, where all the data centers are. Mm-hmm. When I worked at Avatar Dimension, a volumetric capture studio was at Microsoft, mixed reality capture studio doing, you know, holograms, for lack of a better word, but volumetric video. We actually worked inside a data center. So I would go into the data center area here in Northern Virginia, you know, once or twice a week. Very interesting. I mean, these things are massive. They're huge. Northern Virginia has tons of them in Loudoun County and in Prince George County. They require a lot of energy and more now with AI and everything that's happening, the compute power, the processing power, the data centers, like there's this mad race to get more energy for these data centers. And that's obviously fueling a lot of things, some of the, energy that we've used before from like, for example, coal, which I'm not excited about. But also, looking at nuclear, looking at some of the green, green energy that we might be able to produce. But there is this like moment where the data centers are first expanding. They're creating more of these data centers across the world, including here in Northern Virginia quite a bit, because the demand is so incredibly high.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting where the internet really does live. It is typically in areas like Northern Virginia. It's where there's land. There are data centers in Fargo that are incredibly powerful. That's because there's space and like that's where they can put it, and land is cheap. And it is always kind of shocking when you think, oh, the internet and the dawn of like all this modern technology in Silicon Valley. It's like, it's where the ideas and funding go, but where the data goes is definitely different.
Yeah. I got asked one time, like, what could happen for the metaverse not to be realized, right? And the metaverse in the sense of the successor state of today's mobile internet. And I said, well, a catastrophic climate event in Northern Virginia that would wipe out all the data centers. Internet's gone. Like, it's not going to happen. And I don't think people realize that or think about, like, in order for you to get your internet, there has to be a data center. And these data centers consume energy at very high levels and water, because you've got to cool the machines and everything, the racks and everything that are there. So
until we really start investing into decentralizing networks, this is how the internet works, right? Yep. Like now there are still areas, the IPFS network is one of my personal favorites. They're completely decentralized. They share their data amongst little bits and bytes on people's devices that are part of the network. It kind of works like how old pirating software used to work. Not that I would know anything about that. but that's it's a really interesting concept, but it's still miles away. Right now, there is, I think everyone now knows, there is no cloud. Your data is sitting in Northern Virginia on a hard drive somewhere.
Yeah, the internet lives in Northern Virginia. And yeah, I don't think we have time for more stories. We're just going to go to Dispatch from the Fringe with Lily, and she's going to talk to us about the five best and weirdest new technologies unveiled this month. So take it away, Lily.
Hello, Kathy and Lee. Welcome to this week's Dispatch from the Fringe. Today, I have three new and weird tech devices to talk about. So we've been talking a lot about the Humane AI pin and how it didn't quite live up to the hype, and also the Rabbit One AI device. While the company Nothing is jumping on the AI gadget integration, it's launching earbuds that come with ChatGPT. So you can press your earbud and talk directly to ChatGPT. Unfortunately, the integration is only available on Nothing earbuds that are connected to Nothing phones. Secondly, Boston Dynamics has a new humanoid robot. It's all new and electric. It's a generational leap from more than a decade-old hydraulics-based Atlas robot. The old robot was able to walk, run, bend, and lift. But the new Atlas is even stronger and has uncanny flexibility. So we'll probably see it do even more impressive tricks that we didn't know bots could do. And who knows, maybe we'll have one in our homes one day to help us out. Finally, there's a device called the Auto Pro X. It's made by Meitun Motion, and it's meant to be a wireless adapter that can transform your car's navigation screen into a functional laptop-like display. So you can access a range of new features simply by connecting the device to your car's USB port. Meitun says the Auto Pro X can have all kind of functionality, such as a GPS, opening YouTube, or even internet browsing. Although I don't think you should be able to do that while driving, so use it wisely. Also, it's only on Kickstarter, but you can get early bird pricing at $140. So enjoy the new tech that's out there. And that is a wrap for this week's Dispatch from the Fringe.
All right. So that was a great list of new tech being introduced. Fantastic. Very interesting, of course. Thank you, Lily, for bringing that to us. And yeah, like that's the end of the show, Lee. Thanks for joining me for this episode. I think we covered a lot of ground.
We covered a ton of ground in an hour.
We went off planet too. Like that was a lot. That was a lot. So thanks for being here, Lee. And thanks to everyone that joined us for Tech Magic. Come for the tech, stay for the magic. And we're always thrilled with people that send us their comments. We're looking to create a bigger community and bring you more news that are relevant to you. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.